brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I'm a skills and development coach. We will get everybody the basic skills that they need to be successful at the position that they're playing at. Kids are exposed to post-ups, pin-downs, pick and roll, everything that you could possibly think of. We try to give it to them. That way, once the season starts and they start getting with their teams, they should be able to hit the ground running.
Daniel Santiago is a basketball coach at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. As a player, Daniel spent 1 year at New Mexico Military Institute, 2 years at the University of New Mexico, where he won a WAC championship and appeared in the second round of the NCAA championships twice, and 1 year at St. Vincent College, where they won the conference championship and advanced to the NAIA Elite Eight. Santiago was a first-team All-American and NAIA Player of the Year. After college, Santiago continued his basketball career playing professionally for the Phoenix Suns and the Milwaukee Bucks. He played for Argentina, Turkey, Belgium, Puerto Rico, Italy, and Spain. In Puerto Rico, he won 4 championships. In Italy, he won 1, and in Spain, he won 2. Santiago participated in 2 EuroLeague Final Fours and represented Puerto Rico in 2 Olympic Games and 5 World Championships. He's been a coach for NBA Basketball Without Borders and several other NBA camps around the world. Grab some paper and a pen before you listen to this episode with Daniel Santiago from IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida.
Hey Hoopheads, this December our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering $1,000 off and 2 free basketballs with a Dr. Dish home purchase. Plus, all their commercial models are $2,500 off this month. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. You can also check out their holiday gift guide if you're shopping for the ball player in your life.
Hi, this is Kyle Cavanaugh from Essential Coaching, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to be joined by Daniel Santiago from IMG Academy, former international basketball player, played with the Puerto Rican national team that beat our United States Olympic team back in 2004, which we're going to get into and talk about. But Daniel, excited to have you on. Looking forward to diving into all the things you've been able to do in your basketball career. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here and looking forward to telling my story.
For sure. Let's start by going back in time to when you were a kid.
Tell us a little bit about some of your first experiences with the game of basketball.
Oh, man, that was like just recently, right? No, it's just crazy how time flies. Grew up in Texas in a farming community. Was born in Lubbock, but raised out in a farming community outside called Klondike, Texas. And normal kid. My brother and I, we would just always go out and play. We played every sport, football, baseball, basketball, if there was a goal, and just hung out and played outside, which you don't see too many kids doing, nowadays. And, my father one day, decided to buy like a basketball goal. It was like a slab of cement, and he put that goal, and he basically built it, using two wooden poles and bought just the Spalding. I think it was one of those Spalding basketball goals. So it looked really cool, and we would just be out there playing, and he kind of would just show us what he knew. And, we just had fun, but, baseball was really my first passion. My grandfather was a Puerto Rican baseball player, came over from Puerto Rico and tried to make it to the big leagues. And, ironically, they said that he was too small for the major leagues, but he played with some very, high profile guys way back in the day. Roberto Alomar, his father, Santos Alomar, was a very famous Puerto Rican baseball player. They played together. A lot of history, in sports. And, my goal was, to be a professional baseball player. So that was something I just loved to do every day and just tried to stay at it. And I was always, taller than everybody else. So had to work hard on coordination and getting used to, having such a big strike zone. Cause I was always like a head taller than my classmates at just about every grade that I can remember. So, my dad is the one who really introduced me to, basketball and played in a couple of little elementary school things.
Where did your height come from?
My grandfather, he married my grandmother, who was the daughter of one of the baseball teams that he played for, the owner of the baseball team. And she was tall. And so when they had my dad, as a Puerto Rican, is tall. He's about 6'2". And then he met my mother when they moved, when they were living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because my grandfather had to go there to play for the Albuquerque Dukes, a minor league team for the Dodgers. And, that's where my dad met my mother in high school. And my mom she's pretty tall. She's about 5'9". And, her brothers are like 6'4", 6'5". They're real, pretty big guys. So I just got the combination of both sides, and I am the tallest in the family, and that's kind of the way it's been for the past couple of decades here.
probably moving forward, I'd say you probably have a pretty good handle on being the tallest. It's gonna take quite an outlier to be able to beat you. When did basketball overtake baseball? At what point in your life did that happen?
So when we moved my fifth grade year to from Texas to Albuquerque, New Mexico, that was a big change, for me. Albuquerque is like, wow, it's the big city, because we were used to living in a farming community, nothing but farms and land and things like that. And so living out there, there were people that played baseball, but you saw in the area that I was at a lot more people playing on the basketball courts of like the elementary schools and that were in the area. So that's where I started playing, because I had a couple of friends that I kind of knew. And, we started playing a little bit out there on those courts. And usually it was against some older kids that were, bigger or kind of my size, or some adults. And so, just got pushed around a little bit, and, just, always had that competitive nature because, you know, I just, you know, wanted to get better, learn more about the game. I didn't like to lose. So, you know, I just kept coming back and, you know, got a lot of ridicule and things like that. And, but I just stuck with it. And, but I still played still played baseball. Once I got into my sophomore year of high school, actually my freshman year of high school, I was going to try out for the team. But the coach, wouldn't let me because I was supposed to get the physical the day of the tryout or the day after the tryout. And he wouldn't let me try out, because that was the only way I could schedule the physical. And, you know, he had actually said that he was going to let me try out because I was like, you know, 6'4", 6'5", right, as a freshman. And he was like, no, I never said that. And so I just, well, all right, we'll forget basketball my freshman year, played baseball on the freshman team. And then the next year I was like, you know, we'll see what happens. That coach got fired and they brought in a new coach. And they were, you know, very happy to have me on the team. So,
we might want to have the 6'7", 6'8" kid come and play on the team. Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy,
so I was about 6'6" at that time. And so they were just like, you know, okay, well, yeah, we'll have you on there. And you know, it was difficult for me because I was still growing, a lot of coordination, just still learning the game. It was very fast for me, even though I did play other sports. You know, so the baseball, the hand-eye coordination really helped me out a lot. So that sophomore year, I basically played like on the freshman team and a little bit on the JV, just because, you know, they saw some potential and, you know, obviously the height is there. And that the day that we were going to have our basketball banquet, you know, like the end of the year celebration, I had a really good year. I really improved and I was really excited, but I had a game earlier in the day and it was a baseball game. And we were on a team that had probably about 30 kids on the team. The coach really didn't cut anybody. And so finally I got my chance and I played first base, imagine. And, one of my teammates threw the ball towards the runner, fractured my arm. And I spent the whole rest of the evening, getting my, bone adjusted, and missed out on the dinner. And that was really like the bad taste in my mouth of how things were going for baseball because I wasn't getting much playing time.
Right.
And then I finally did, broke my arm at first base and I missed the banquet. And so I was just like, you know what? I think I'm just going to stick with basketball. So that's how I really got serious because I was very serious about baseball. I mean, it was every day, like watching the Braves or the Cubs play because we used to have TBS and WGN.
Yep.
And I used to watch that all the time. So, but then, you know, I was watching basketball a little bit too, but not as religiously as baseball just because I really thought I could make it. And, you know, who knows, but that's how that went. And I stuck it out in high school basketball and just it was every day to the court, street games, back to the high school court and just learning, get better. And I had some of the parents along the way that were big guys, that taught me, you know, just out of the kindness of their hearts, people from, you know, different, you know, look different than me. You know, different cultures and just out of the kindness of their hearts, you know, helping me. And they saw a lot of potential that I had. And then I would just try to soak it in and be a hard worker. You know, my parents taught me about working hard and I just really worked hard at the game and, just tried to learn and watch videos. I watched the NBA superstar, videos, the music videos and watched, you know, Elijah Wan and David Robinson, those guys and how they played and just try to mimic that. And that was really the beginning of the journey to get through to college and then all the way to being a international and professional player.
When you talked earlier about playing outdoors and you said, hey, kids don't really do that very often anymore. And that's one of the things that when I look back on my time as a player, and I'm 52 years old. And so I grew up in an era where I did the same thing that it sounds like you did, where I was outside and playing on the courts. And that's where I tried to really improve my game and get better. When you tell kids today that you're coaching, that you're working with, that, hey, you know, I used to work on my game and go and play outside, what's the kids' responses? Because there's so few kids now that really play the game outdoors just because of the way the system is today. So when you think back on your experience as a player and playing outdoors, what did that mean to you? And then kind of what did the kids say when you talked to them about kind of how you developed as a player?
I mean, it's hard because it's hard for them to relate to that because they're like, you know, especially here in Florida where I'm living in, I mean, it is hot.
Yeah.
And it's human, you know, and so in some cases I understand, like it is almost child abuse. It is so hot and humid, but again, that didn't impede me from wanting to go out and compete and just get better and, you know, beat the, you know, the guys that were, you know, running the court that day, whether it was like, you know, during the week or usually the Saturday, you know, games from, you know, around 11 till, you know, evening. I mean, it was a big deal to be that team that stayed on the court that whole day. And so it really stunk when you lost and had to wait 1, 2, 3 games if there were a lot of people and they already had their teams. So, you know, that was, you know, you wanted to compete. You know, kids nowadays, I mean, everybody gets a ribbon, everybody gets a trophy. And, you know, they play in a lot better conditions. I mean, because, you know, most of the LA fitnesses or, you know, there's complexes, you know, for basketball gyms and things like that. And everybody's got a trainer. Like I didn't, you know, the only cones I saw were the cones that were, you know, for the traffic, you know, or that yep. the men at work, you know, sign, you'd see all the cones and things like that. So, like that was non-existent. You did the same thing over and over. You had 5-spot shooting. And then you just try to figure out how to defeat your opponent or beat your opponent. If they knew your left hand was weak, they were going to push you left. So you were like, man, I'm going to have to figure out how to go left.
Yeah. I think it's just a difference in terms of how kids grow up, as you said, with the trainer versus the way that you went about it, where you're kind of out on the court, just trying to figure things out for yourself. How much did you balance as you were a high school player trying to improve and get better? How much did you balance out playing pickup basketball versus how much time you were putting in by yourself, just working on your game skill development wise?
Man, that's a real good question. Because with our high school team, our coach did a pretty good job of trying to, you know, having the gym open for us. You know, if we weren't in another sport, I fortunately made friends with a guy who, you know, was been my best friend for a very long time, was the best man at my wedding. And he was a big guy. He was about 6'6", but he could handle left, right. He could shoot. He was a very good player, very good for high school. And I was very fortunate that I had a buddy that either I would drive or he would drive, depending on who that had the car or if our parents would go find a court or get to our high school court and just shoot or maybe play each other a little one-on-one, that kind of a thing. So that helped me because he was quicker than me, but he had good size. So kind of just held each other accountable for that. So I was very fortunate to have a good friend like that, you know, he wanted to get better and he wanted me to get better and vice versa. And we would go and just, you know, play each other, whatever we could with the ball until, you know, we just got tired and then we would go play video games or something else. But you know what I mean? It was just, that was on our mind because we really both thought we could get scholarships. And that was, you know, because both of our families, you know, we didn't come from wealthy families. So it wasn't going to be an option. We had to get scholarships if we wanted to go to college or go to that next level.
What's your favorite memory from high school basketball? And then we'll get into talking a little bit about your college experiences.
I think one of the cherry on the top for me was being able to play in the North-South All-Star game for high school. During that time, the big guys that were really good were AJ Bramlett, who had an amazing career playing at Arizona, won a NCAA championship at Arizona with Luke Wilson. And, I think it was, Bibby and
Miles Simon.
Guys like that.
Yep.
And we later played against each other in Europe. He was the main big guy. So they had a Nike like flight team, and I didn't get invited because I wasn't good enough. And so for me to be able to make it to that high school All-Star game was nice recognition to finish my high school career. And what was amazing is about, I'm a born again believer, and I mean, God has done some amazing things and put me in some amazing situations to meet some really good people that helped me along the way. And that game, the future coaches that I went to junior college with, they were at that game and I hadn't signed with anybody, and they went like crazy in the arena, trying to find my parents. And and they were both big guys. One was 6'5" and the other guy was like 6'10", and they, one played in the Harlem Globetrotters, the other played in the CBA back in the day. So I was like, oh, okay, these guys might know something. They could help me out. So that game helped me get to the next step in my career, which was a year of junior college basketball at a military school.
So what was that year like for you?
Oh, man. It was interesting just because, I've always been fascinated with the military, and just the order and just the way things are run in the military. So it was a good opportunity because, after high school, you either go to college, get a job, or, go to the military. I mean, that was, pretty much most of the options back in the day.
Right.
And so I got a little kind of a taste of both, except the job part of making money. But I mean, they gave me a full scholarship there, got over there, they shaved my head. But what was cool is the coaches prepared us for all the things that we would have to do, all the military stuff, shine your belt, your shoes, how to look presentable. So we had like a week where we had kind of a leg up on everybody else. So it wasn't as tough for us. And they kind of got us mentally ready for all the craziness that was going to go on. So it was great because it helped me develop a lot of mental toughness and, dealing with the military people. Sometimes they're not very rational. And my brother served in the Navy, and it's not for everybody, but I'm truly grateful because I did learn a lot. I learned a lot, but I really tried to hide out in the gym and just learn from the coaches when they were there and try to play them one-on-one. And that really helped me out a lot. And, I was very grateful. The one thing I do remember, when I first got there, I saw the locker rooms and they had a player. His name is, Terrence Rencher, and his brother, Mike Rencher. His brother Terrence Rencher played at the University of Texas. Mike Rencher was like 6'6", and he was in his second year at junior college. And he was a very athletic, really like a foreman, but really had some great moves and just super athletic. And I saw his locker, and he had all these letters from all these colleges. And I was just like, wow. I mean, it was just full of it. And I was just like, wow. And so the head coach, he was like, if you work really hard, I guarantee, your locker is going to be like that. And sure enough, I worked really hard that year, had a great year. And when I came back, thinking possibly of going back another year, I looked at my locker and he was like, you remember last year when you saw Mike's locker? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, look at yours. And I had like all these letters from all these different colleges, you know, colleges I'd never heard of. And so that was just like a really cool memory that I had in junior college.
You feel like how big was your growth as a player during that year? Like how much do you feel like you improved? When was the explosion where you went from, okay, I think I can be a college player to I think I can maybe play professionally? When did that transition take place? In junior college, did you start to see that? Did it happen the following year when you got to New Mexico? Just tell me a little bit about when you feel like you really got better.
Man, I think it was that year just because I was like, man, I'm playing against this guy who's a grown man that played CBA, you know, he did professional and the league at that time in, it was New Mexico and, Texas. And we played some teams in Colorado, and then there were some tough, you know, like Midland, Odessa, Howard, Frank Phillips, like those group of colleges had some really tough, competition. And there was at that time, there were some big guys too, you know, at least 6'9". You know, there was even one of Manute Bol's like distant cousins. It was like 7'3" or something like that. And I had really good games against those teams and just put up really good numbers. And our team, you know, we did well. We were winning. And it was starting to get more consistent, you know, and I gained a lot of respect from a lot of people. And got invited to like some, JUCO, like showcases. And, so a lot of D1 coaches saw me. And, you know, after that, the next step was I signed with the University of, New Mexico on a full scholarship. And that was kind of like a, you know, a dream come true. Cause I used to watch the Lobos, the New Mexico Lobos play. And that was the hometown as well. And I figured, like, man, you know, some people know me here and it'd be a great fit. And, you know, it kind of did and didn't work out for me, those 2 years at the University of New Mexico.
All right. Talk about the did and the didn't part of it. You got to play in the Pit.
Man, that was awesome.
I bet.
That was awesome. Cause you know, we would see that on TV all the time.
For sure.
And just the atmosphere, the people love it. The fans were great. So yeah, I was in there, we're playing, or practicing, you know, against other guys that are, you know, top level guys. And I'm in there, you know, banging with those guys. We had, Kenny Thomas came in as a freshman. He played a couple of years in the league, for like Sacramento, the 76ers, and Houston, I want to say. So he was about 6'9". I mean, probably one of the best players that University of New Mexico had. And so I was behind him, but like way down at the other end of the bench, you know, the coach, he liked playing, you know, 7, maybe 8 players. And if you weren't, you know, that guy, I mean, you weren't getting in, and we would have to be up by like 20, you know, or so for me to get in. And I mean, the crowd would even like chant my name and things like that, because I'd get in and I'd be so amped up that I was just trying to dunk everything, block everything, just be physical. And you know what I mean? Because I mean, I'm sitting on the bench like, man, I think I could help.
Right.
You know, I've been practicing with these guys, you know, I think I can help, whatever. And I used to, you know, with the days I didn't play, like I'd come home and like my stomach would be in a knot. Like I was just so anxious and, you know, with that hope that I was maybe going to get some minutes, and, you know, it wouldn't happen. And then finally they'd let me in there, and then I'd go in and, you know, do all these things and, you know, thinking maybe I'll get a chance, but it never really came to be. And in my sophomore year, I'm sorry, at kind of towards the end of my sophomore year, there was a lot of teams from Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rican league. They were looking at me because this one guy that recruited me from Adams State College, he knew some people in the Puerto Rican league, and he asked, "Oh, is he Santiago? Is that last name? Is that Puerto Rican?" He's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, well, you know, they got a league down there. And I'm thinking, yeah, baseball, right? Because I know my grandfather right. played over there. And he's like, no, man, they love basketball there. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, if I tell people your name and this and that? And I was like, oh, all right, whatever. You know, I had no idea. And so next thing I know it, I'm getting all these calls from owners of teams, mayors of, you know, the towns of the teams, you know, these businessmen coming over that own these teams. And it was like the recruiting process all over again. And so that was like, it was really cool. And then we decided we're like, all right, let's go check it out. Because we weren't sure if that was going to be a rules violation at that time. But at that time, thank God, the NCAA had recognized the Puerto Rican League as a league for the college players could go as long as they didn't get paid. Like they could get their expenses paid, you know, a car and an apartment and, you know, some food money, but they could not get paid because, you know, they wanted us to keep our amateur status.
Right. Interesting.
So that was back in the day when two Puerto Rican guards played for the University of Massachusetts named Carmelo Travieso and Edgar Padilla. They played for John Calipari and also played with Marcus Camby. And that was back in the day when UMass was like undefeated in the tournament. And those guards were just, they were all over the place. And so I saw them and I knew they were in the league. So I was like, everybody knows those guys. Like, I'm going to go. And so one of the coaches tried to stop my mother and I when we were getting ready to leave to go to Puerto Rico to visit one of the teams that we felt comfortable going over with. And he was at the airport at like 5 in the morning saying, we don't know if it's going to be a rules violation. You know, don't go. And my mom's just like, we're going to go. So she helped me in that aspect. And we went over, we had a good time. They, you know, showed us everything about the island, met some really great people that would be, you know, influential in my life in Puerto Rico. And was like, all right, I'm going to sign with the team. The team I signed there was Bayamón Vaqueros, which is the Bayamón Cowboys. And they had like a pretty good history of basketball and just some really good players who I met, and they kind of took me under my wing. And that's what led me to start playing in the Puerto Rican League against grown men. Cause I mean, that's what I needed. And these guys had so much experience. And also I started playing for the under 21 team for Puerto Rico, and I did really well. And the men's national team brought me along, and I was able to represent Puerto Rico in the 96 Olympics in Atlanta.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
So what's that Olympic experience like? I mean, obviously, you get to go in and just beyond the experience from a basketball standpoint, what's it like being in the Olympic Village with all these other great athletes from all the world, different sports? What's that experience like?
So for me, it was like a dream come true because I used to always watch the Summer Olympics when it would come on, I think it was like, you know, ABC or CBS or one of those channels. And it was just so fascinating, you know, to see these athletes represent their countries and how passionate they were, regardless of the sport. And I was just like, I mean, it was like awesome. So, you know, I, as a, as a kid living in the States, I, you know, dreamed of representing the United States, right, and this and that. And then next thing you know it, I get this opportunity. God opens up this door for me to start playing for Puerto Rico. Like, I mean, it's like in a blink of an eye. And they're like, all right, you, Carmelo Travieso, and Edgar Padilla are going to be, you know, they were like, you know, you guys are the future for Puerto Rico, for basketball in Puerto Rico. And we're going to bring you guys along on the trip to get the experience for the next, you know, generation coming in. And it was, I mean, it was awesome. We, you know, land in Atlanta. First time I've been to I've been to Atlanta before, but it was too much. And it was, I mean, this is big time. This is the Georgia Tech dorms that were brand new. I mean, you're meeting people from different countries and things you've only seen in the movies or read about in books. And like, everybody is, you know, muscular. Everybody's like your height. Like, I remember seeing like some of the volleyball girls from other countries. Like, I was like, I didn't know they came in those sizes. Like, these girls were like 6'8", 6'7", volleyball players, basketball players, that, Dawn Staley, you know, Cheryl Swoops, cause they were all on that dream team, the women's dream team. Met them in the arena, Lisa Leslie, and you know, and she's very tall too. And, I'll never forget, I met Vlade Divac while we were waiting on the bus to go to practice. And I took a picture with him on one of those, disposable Kodak cameras. Ah,
there you go.
You remember those?
Yeah, I remember those.
And I had that picture, and I was just like, you know, I end up later playing against him in one of the biggest games of my international career in Indianapolis in 2002. And when we beat Yugoslavia and he was on that team, I had like 30-10 against them. And that was one of my best, you know, games as playing for Puerto Rico, or among some of the best games that I had. And so it just, you is really cool to remember those moments and see that little picture and realize, like, you know, how fast things can go and how quick God can move. And but it was amazing. The food was amazing. There was food from all different countries. You know, the just so many people. There were celebrities that would come and visit. You know, I saw LL Cool J had like a little concert. Nice. in one of the little makeshift rooms that they made. I mean, it was almost like a house party. And there was other celebrities like singing on these like little stages just throughout the village. And you're just like, where, you know, what in the world is going on here? I mean, it was just like a whole nother world inside that village, but it was amazing.
Did you have an opportunity to attend any other sporting events?
Man, I was just so focused on, you know, doing well and representing our country. I think we did see like other teams play basketball.
Right.
And yeah, that's when I met like the women's dream team. But other than that, like, I think some of the venues were just a little bit kind of out of the way to get mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't all in the one in the basketball arena. I mean, there was other venues and other arenas, but we had our own floor where we were paired up with China, and I don't think there was any other countries with us. So it was just like Puerto Rico and China on one of the buildings, and it was hilarious because all the Chinese would be gathered around watching the TV because they had like the living room area,
right?
You know how they have in the college dorm, and they were watching, you know, all their countrymen on the TV. And then there was a phone that you had back then. You had to use a little phone card and dial the number, and it was always a Puerto Rican on the phone calling somebody in Puerto Rico. And then you come back 20 minutes later and be a different Puerto Rican, and the same Chinese people watching their countrymen. And it was just funny. But, you know, you had free food everywhere. There was always promotions. There was a gym that you could go to with like the brand new equipment. So it was crazy. It was like a crazy marketing ground too, because everybody had these new products to help you, your body and recovery and things like that. So it was a lot, but it was awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool. I mean, just the experience of being able to be there and be in the Olympic Village and just experience everything that goes along with that.
And seeing Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
I had an iconic moment.
Yeah,
lit the torch.
Yeah.
And I'm there in the arena. I think I had another disposable camera trying to get a picture of him, but I don't think that turned out too well. But I mean, you know, you're among some of the best athletes in the world at their sport, at their craft, representing their country. And it was amazing to be even a part of that.
Well, let's put it this way. If we said that kids were going to look at you funny when you talk about playing basketball outside, they're going to look at you really funny. You start talking about the disposable cameras and not knowing whether or not you got, the picture. Kids are like, what are these old guys talking about? It's crazy. Right. Just how the times change. So obviously at this point, you're looking at, hey, I think I'm going to be able to, you know, maybe make a living doing this. And at some point here, you get an opportunity to go and play in Italy. Talk a little bit about that.
So after the Olympics, that was in 96, 98, I finished my senior year at a small NAIA school in Latrobe, Pennsylvania called St. Vincent College, because I just knew that I wasn't going to get any more playing time. And I just wanted to go and play. And So one of my teammates from Puerto Rico was playing at that school, and he told his coach, and I went over there and had a great time. And he had a lot of connections. So, I was able to get to some of the NBA draft camps, did well, just didn't get drafted. And, you know, obviously not well enough to get drafted. I thought the Spurs or the Knicks were going to pick me up, but they picked up some other big guys. And so, fortunately we had to go to the World Cup, the World Championships for basketball in Athens. And I did pretty well there. And an Italian team saw me. I had to go to Venezuela for another Puerto Rican, you know, like a tournament, another basketball tournament, Pan American Games. And this team from Italy called me up, and I flew from Venezuela to all the way to Europe. I mean, it was just crazy. It was the longest, one of the longer flights I've been on. I've been in Australia. That's a long flight, but this was a long one. A lot of connections. Make it to Milan. The owner's son picks me up in his Porsche. So I'm like scrunched up in his Porsche. It was one of the loudest vehicles I've ever been in. And he drove me all the way up into the mountains where they were training, getting their preseason, going. So straight from that to 2 days, didn't know any Italian. I'm learning Spanish because I, didn't speak Spanish as well. So I'm learning Spanish. I'm learning trying to get Italian down too. And then learning the European game, like it's totally different. Very physical. I mean, you know, guys are just hitting you all over the place. And as a big, you know, you got to be strong. You got to be able to take those punches. So, the owner, the coach didn't want me because he wanted a veteran American, you know, a reinforcement player, which, you know, thinking about it now, I'm like, okay, I get it. The owners liked me, you know, because I was cheap. So, but I wasn't that bad, but it wasn't what the coach had in mind. So that kind of ruffled that relationship. I'm still learning the adjustment of how to play over there. And it gets to be like the third or fourth game, and I'm starting to hear a little bit of some of the boo birds coming out, or they like to whistle over there when they boo. So, I'm starting to hear a couple of those. But things started to click. And I had a really good point guard named Gianmarco Pacheco, who's actually the head coach for the Italian national team right now. And he was very good at handling the ball. And one of his favorite things was the pick and roll. So, which was great for me because the coach, he told me, like, we're not going to give the ball to you. You're just there for defense and rebound and block shots. That's it. If you get the ball and score, it's going to be by accident, basically. So I'm like, whatever. All right. This is the job. I was very frustrated, but okay. This is what God put in my hands. So let me do what I can. So starting to get the flow of it. And this little point guard, man, he was really good. He'd penetrate and he was a very good passer. So it was funny because he would try to look for his, but then he would, give me that pass back. If he had nowhere else to go. So I just kind of figured out, and I'm taking my frustration and anger out on that rim every time. That was my goal. I'm going to dunk on everybody. And, I started like dunking on everybody. I started, blocking shots, catching the rhythm and figuring it out. And then he started, some of the fans started getting excited because I was playing above the rim, which they didn't see too often there in that league. And so then people, started, really cheering me on and they were like, man, we were winning and it was a tough league. So we ended up winning the league that year. And that really I gained a lot of, obviously a lot of exposure, but a lot of confidence and a lot of prestige from other coaches and scouts. And so, that year we won the championship and then we were able to represent Italy in the McDonald's Goodwill games. And they would invite all the teams that won championships, and the Spurs won the championship in that shortened lockout season. And so I had already had a good game against Tim Duncan when he played for USA Select, and we played in Puerto Rico against each other. So scouts were already I was on their radar. And in this game, we played the Spurs. They had David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Avery Johnson, guys like that, Mario Elie. They just come off that championship. And, I had, we as a group, we played with a weaker team than we had the year before for that Italian team. And we were beating the Spurs the whole time. And I had a really good game. I dunked on Tim Duncan. Nice. And that dunk, everybody saw that and it was worldwide and everything. So that really raised my stock. And the Phoenix Suns ended up giving me a look. And that's how I got into the Phoenix Suns team. Scott Skiles liked me and got on that team, just from, the success that I had playing for the Italian team.
All right. So talk about that experience with the Suns. What's it like going from the European League and with Italy and then going and playing in the NBA, just what was obviously level of play much higher. Just talk about your experiences.
Man, first of all, you sign and it's just like, wow, I made it, because that was one of my goals.
Right.
And just being around, Jason Kidd, we had Tom Gugliotta, the Matrix was just starting his career. Mario Elie ended up being on the Phoenix Suns team. Clifford Robinson, from the Trailblazers, Rodney Rogers. I mean, we had a really good team and we were in the West. So we ended up winning 55 games and still come out, eighth place in the Western, conference. It was tough. I mean, I'm playing against Shaq, playing against Duncan and Robinson. And then you had Mike Oluwakandi, Sabonis in Portland. These guys, you see them on TV and you're like, man, I'm here playing against them, Elijah Wan in the latter part of his career. And, it was just amazing. It was amazing. Most guys will say they remember the popcorn smell when you first play your first NBA game, because that's all that fills the building. And it was just a great moment. And I was starting, you know, I'm out there, you know, guarding Shaq. I'm out there guarding these guys that you, that I used to watch when I was, you know, in high school and college. And, so it was very surreal and it wasn't easy, but, you know, I found, you know, found a way to make it happen and, you know, did well. I held my own.
Did you feel like once you got there that you were going to be able to stick for a long time, or did you feel like it was kind of precarious that, man, I'm right here on the bubble of I'm going to make it or maybe not make it? What was your mindset at that point?
Well, I mean, I was just, you know, still learning the game. And I was like, man, I mean, I was starting and we were having success. I also saw some of the politics on the other side of that, because they had drafted another big guy, you know, because everybody's trying to stop Shaq. So they had drafted a big Jake Sakalidis. And so, you know, I'm starting and Jake's coming off on the bench, and it, you know, kind of didn't look good, you know, that a minimum wage guy was out there starting and your future, you know, draft, your lottery picks there sitting on the bench. So I had to like, you know, sit the bench for a while. Like I couldn't even dress, you know, nobody's gonna, you know, outwork me. Or, you know, you're not going to say that, oh, well, he never comes in on time, or he knows things about me, because, you know, I took it serious. So, but at the end of the day, you know, it just didn't work out. I had an injury also at the end, plantar fasciitis that I dealt with. And so they ended up releasing me. And I kind of had to start over in a sense, went back to Italy and, you know, try to make the most of that situation. But I was a little, disappointed when I got to the league, because I really didn't feel like I had too many people to kind of take me under their wing and, you know, help me like I had a couple of veterans do in when I played in Puerto Rico and in Italy, you know, just kind of show me the ropes. Everybody was just doing their own thing. I mean, you know, Jason Kidd, he was cool, but you know, everybody had, you know, once we left the court, everybody was doing their own thing, you know? So, it was for me disappointing. I thought I was going to get like the big man book of the Bible of big man moves and stuff like that. And I just, you know, honestly,
do you think that was the culture of that team? Or do you think that's typical of what was going on in the league at that time?
I think it was typical what's going on in the league, and I think that still happens. And but there are teams that are not like that, that the culture is a little bit different. Again, we had a lot of veterans on the team, so you know, that could have played a part of it, of, you know, guys that were just like, you know. I mean, they were all good dudes, but, you know, nobody really took that extra step, you know, to, you know, hey, young fella, you know. I mean, there were certain things that they did, but it felt like that I had really learned a lot from the coach that I had at New Mexico, as far as like footwork and body positioning, that I was one of the best, you know, post-up players, you know, that they had. So I just wasn't getting any of the calls because I was the rookie. And I mean, I remember seeing some of the videos of guys just like high-fiving my wrist and I can't even get my, you know, shot off. And the referee's just looking at me like, yeah, welcome to the league, rook. So, you know, that may have played a part in it, but. You know, it was what it was. And like I said, I did the best that I could do, and it just didn't work out. I did get back into the league after playing in Rome and played for the Milwaukee Bucks. Got to play with Tony Kukoc, Michael Redd, And guys like Desmond Mason, Tim Thomas, Keith Van Horn, Joe Smith, you know, and TJ Ford. So, you know, and same thing there. I mean, I started, came off the bench, and, you know, had an injury the second year. I had a really bad eye injury. And then after that, I went to Europe and played in Malaga, Spain for 3 years. Won a championship there and played in Barcelona, championship there, Turkey, Belgium, and then Argentina. And I always played in Puerto Rico in the summertime and for the national team, and went to another Olympics in 2004.
What was your favorite country you played in?
Oh, man, that's tough because each one has its own thing. I mean, Italy was awesome. You know, some of the best food, that Italian food was just, it was just so different, you know, yeah, than what you get here. It was just so fresh, and like I could eat the simple plates, all day, every day. And what was cool is we had like a favorite restaurant we used to go to, and my wife became really good friends with the daughter of the owner, and you know, it wasn't cheap. And we would go up there to pay, and the father would be like, no, you know, you just, it's good business that you're here. And I was like, all right, well, we'll see you tomorrow.
There you go. Hey, we'll be back.
Yeah. And, let's get this to go. And
nice.
So, but you know, it was a different atmosphere, very family, oriented. And, you know, and I started learning the language. I think a lot of people respected me for that, and, to do the interviews in Italian. And, you know, because, you know, the languages are very similar. So it helped me learn Spanish and Italian. And so, yeah, it was awesome. Spain was great. I mean, we were in the southern coast. They call it the Costa del Sol, which is the sun coast, and Malaga. And that was beautiful. And Barcelona is just an amazing city as well. Each one has its own history and way of living and culture. It's amazing.
What's the craziest European basketball story you can tell us that's PG?
Oh man. Yeah, PG, huh?
PG-13, how about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was just insane to me sometimes watching the things that would happen in the games, and you're just like, you know, wow, the referee did not make the call, and you're like, that's got to be one of the craziest plays I've ever seen. And then and then 2 nights later, you'd be like, no, that was the craziest thing I've ever seen. And you know, it just seemed like it would top itself every other week, you know, just the officials' calls, and then things that would happen, fans would throw things. You know, as it was a big rivalry game, like I remember a fan was running around like trying to kick the players, and we all had to go in the locker room. The riot police had to go out there, calm everybody down. Then we played the game, and then we were up, and they didn't like the call that the ref made, and somebody threw stuff, and then the ref was like, that's it, game's over. And then all the stuff got thrown out on the court. They were throwing the coins, the screws of the chairs. You know, they're throwing rocks at the bus. We're trying to get out of there like alive. And you're just like, man, it's just a basketball game. You know, I mean, one of the craziest places, was Partizan in Belgrade in, Serbia. And, there was a big game that we had. And all the fans knew that if their team would win, they would get into the EuroLeague top 16. But we were also trying to fight for good position in the EuroLeague top 16 as well. So it goes into like overtime. They thought they won. They had people run out there. Then they get news that one of the teams in the EuroLeague lost. So automatically we're both in. So they're like crazy excited. And I'm sorry, before the game even starts, like people were stabbing each other to get tickets, like their own fans were stabbing each other to get tickets.
Wow.
So like that shows how the atmosphere was. And okay, so we go through, we do the overtime. We ended up winning it in overtime. but they kind of like were so distracted that they had won, that they were in, that they didn't play to win, because we played to win. We ended up getting into a better group. They went into like, they called the group of death.
Yeah.
So that was all they got was, you know, okay, they made it to the top 16, but then after that, they had to play all these tough teams because of the position that they were in. So, you know, it was just crazy. There's just always atmospheres like that. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed most, was going and beating somebody in their home gym, especially in Europe, because it was tough to do.
As long as you can escape on the bus without getting pummeled with foreign objects, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's a plus too. Argentina, we had a playoff game. They threw the rock, and my son and my wife were on the bus with us, and the rock hit one of my teammates. It wasn't a rock. It was like a stone. So yeah, stuff like that happens, you know, people spit on the players. You know, it can get very volatile.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I've heard lots of stories just of different situations similar to ones that you described that are kind of crazy.
If you think about soccer, I mean,
yeah, right.
Yep. It's just a microcosm of it.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt about that. All right. Tell us a little bit about the 2004 Olympics and beating the U.S.
Man, another incredible experience. Again, get blessed to go back to the Olympics and Athens, of all places, like the start of the Olympics. So a lot of, you know, unique and cool history to go back to Greece and Athens. I mean, I always joke around. I said I could probably be a Greek citizen because of so many tournaments that I played in Athens. So we get to go there. We qualified, and you know, we had a really good team. We had a good mix of big guys and wings, and our guards were really quick. You know, Carlos Arroyo was really starting to come into his own, and that was one of his big breakout games that he had. We you know, played the U.S. in kind of like almost like a triangle and two, just had one guy, you know, bothering Tim Duncan, and then the other two bigs, which were me and big Jose Ortiz. We just dared the wings to shoot threes, and everybody else locked up on the little guards like Iverson and Marbury. And they couldn't shoot. They didn't shoot very well from the outside. And we really relied on that. And then we just tried to get the rebound and run our break. And we were able to do that and hit big shots throughout the whole game. And it was like, it was the first game. So it was a big statement that we made. And obviously, as you see the Netflix, you know, movie about the Redeem Team, that was kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back on that, because, you know, they couldn't just bring, you know, guys 2-3 weeks before and just bring them in and play, because Argentina beat them in the World Championships, and they had guys that were very good players, but just been playing together for a very long time. So, you know, the same thing with us. We had guys that had been playing together for a couple of years, and that was a big key factor. So that's why they had to start changing things. So but it was really cool to be a part of that. It was on a international stage. You know, it's on the internet, so it's still relevant.
yeah.
I get a lot of people, you know, Puerto Ricans, you know, people from Europe, even Americans that will remember, and they're like, yeah, we watched that game, man. You guys kicked our butt. And so, you know, it was a part of basketball history that I'm very proud to say that I, you know, one of the many games that I've been a part of, you know, making basketball history. And God blessed me with that opportunity and bless our team.
Yeah, I think you said it really well. Obviously, just for you personally to be able to be a part of that and experience it, but then also what it did to, or for, I guess, USA basketball to be able to sort of jumpstart the change and looking at it and saying, hey, we got to do things differently. And then obviously anybody who's watched the Redeem Team video, you get a chance to see kind of what the mindset was of USA basketball to make a change. And obviously that game against you guys was part of that whole process that kind of kickstarted it. So being able to be in two Olympic games and be able to do it in your home country in Atlanta, and then to be able to go and experience it in Athens, I'm sure was just, yeah, I can't imagine just the opportunity to, again, to be a part of that Olympic Village and just to go through and the opening ceremonies in both of those places and then just be a part of that, I'm sure was super special. At any point during your coaching career, were you thinking about coaching? Was that something that was on your mind while you were playing that, hey, someday maybe I'm going to get into coaching? Or was it more a case of, well, you know, now my playing career is over and I kind of want to stay involved in the game? How do you get to that point with coaching?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was something that I always, you know, I mean, I thought about in the back of my mind, you know, retirement kind of came up, quick for me. It wasn't an injury or anything like that. It was just, you know, my kids were, you know, in high school. And when you're playing overseas, you know, sometimes you don't know what city you're going to be in, what country it's going to be. Is it going to be safe? Are there, you know, the schools that your kids would be able to, you know, do well in as far as like the academics? You know, there's a lot of like things that I think some people don't really, you know, think about. You know, they think it's just, you just get to play and you just make money. But, you know, you have a family. And so you know.
That might be true when you're 22. That might be true when you're 22 or 23, right? It changes as you get older, for sure.
Right. So that was a factor in, me, you know, going into retirement. But, you know, I always, you know, kind of had that in the back of my mind, you know, what to do. You know, I feel like I probably could have, planned some things out a little bit better. Cause like when it happens, it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, so fortunately I've, you know, kind of kept up with networking and talking to people. And, I used to train at IMG, a couple of years in, you know, when I was still playing as a pro, and I always thought, man, it'd be kind of cool to be a coach at IMG. And, so that door kind of opened up. One of the directors at the time, they were trying to get, this big Indian kid, Satnam Singh, who's now in the AEW, wrestling. He was, from India. He was trying to become the first Indian born NBA player drafted in the NBA. And so, that was an opportunity for me to kind of like work him out and just show him, you know, how to be successful. And, you know, worked him real hard. And that was kind of like the door that opened for me to kind of start getting the coaching and just get my foot in the door. And he did well and got drafted. I think he played about 2 or 3 years for the G League, Legends. And then, you know, later on, I think he went to some other places to play. And now he's like a new figure in the AEW wrestling. And he came back and visited, and I mean, he's big. He's, you know, 7'3". He's over 300 pounds. I mean, he looks like one of those, statues, those, Greek god statues. I mean, he's huge, great guy, lovable guy, man. So, was blessed to have that opportunity. So that kind of got my foot in the door, and, a new director came aboard and I applied, and a guy that I knew, by the name of Billy Clapper, he knew me. I played on his TBT team when it was, starting up for sideline cancer.
Okay.
And, so he told me there was a coaching opportunity, and I applied and you know, just got in, that way. So I've been doing it for about 7 years, been able to work out some pros and guys that were going from college to get drafted. I've worked with, Jared Allen, Luke Cornett, and, you know, Ja Morant, to name a few, and just, really, you know, enjoyed that aspect of it. And I do the same, work out the high school and post grad kids, that we have at IMG. We have like 18 teams now. So from middle, JV, high school varsity to post-grad, and also boys and girls. So I get to work with a lot of interesting kids from different countries. And, you know, it's a blessing. I'm just trying to give back and teach them all the things that I experienced, and hopefully they'll use it and put it to good use for their futures and their careers in basketball and in life.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
What's your process like when you start working with a new player, whether it be a pro, whether it be one of the high school kids at IMG, when you're sitting down and you're going to work with the player and go through their first workout with them? What do you do to prep yourself to be able to provide them with the most value that you can?
Well, you know, you just kind of want to relate to them in some way. Like if the person's from another country, you know, there's a possibility I might know some of their language or something. And so I think that's something that's beneficial. You know, you just try to find a common ground, and at the end of the day, look, man, I'm here for you and to get you better. And I'm going to try to teach you all the things that gave me success, because, you know, I've been at almost every level you can think of. I mean, from freshman team to JV to varsity to junior college, D1, NAIA, international, Olympic, NBA, you know, I mean, I pretty much can cover just about every level you want to go to. So,
for sure.
At the end of the day, I'm trying to make you look good. And these are the little tricks that I, you know, learned along the way. And, you know, I think it'll benefit you, you know. But at the same time, the player has to believe in it and trust it. So, you know, like I said, nowadays kids can look you up on the internet and they're like, oh, you're on the internet. So, you know, you must know what you're talking about. And, you know, so sometimes it goes like that. But, yeah, just trying to find a common ground with them and try to relate to them. And, you know, at the end of the day, it might just be like, hey, man, you're messing with your money right now. Like, let's get focused. And sometimes that'll be the thing that they need to hear.
How much film do you watch with players, or how much film do you watch when you're prepping, kind of putting it together, whether it's with a pro or if you're working with one of your guys at IMG, when you work with one of the kids, are you looking at game film of them or with them so you can kind of get an idea of what they do, what they need to work on?
Well, as far as like the pros or the guys that are trying to get drafted, you kind of already have an idea. You know, they're pretty much almost, you know, set in the ways, you know, that they shoot, because you, unless it's just something that's really drastic and something that they are going to sit down and will change. Like, you know, I try to be careful not to change too much with somebody's shooting technique, maybe a detail, you know, a ball positioning or something like that. But, you know, I believe that's something that's, if you're going to, you know, overhaul somebody's shot, for example, like they have to be, they've got to be like mentally committed to do it.
Yep. No doubt.
You know, cause I've tried to help, you know, one kid, and, they would bring the ball from the, they were right-handed. They would bring the ball to the left side of their body and shoot it. And it was just very, very inconsistent. And, you know, and the kid was, you know, about 17, 18, but it just, you know, already kind of set in their ways. And I would just say, hey, all right, this is something you have to do. It's a habit that you have to break. If you say you want to do it, then this is what you got to do. And, you know, this kid was always resorting back to the old way of doing things. And I was just like, all right, you know, I feel like I'm going to cause more harm than good by just, you know, beating him over the head on it. I mean, there's some kids that will take it and they'll figure it out. But there are some that are just, you know, they just keep going back to the old way, whether it's just a confidence or they're so comfortable doing it that way, they don't want to change. There could be fear. And, you know, there's that mental side of things, you know, because you want them to trust you. But sometimes you just got to step back and kind of let them fall on their own. And then maybe they'll come back to you and, you know, hey, maybe not. And maybe somebody else will change it, you know, down the road. But if I have the chance to watch film with especially the younger kids, just so they can see the game the way that a pro sees the game, you know, I definitely do that. And at IMG, we have, we try to record all the kids' games. So that is something that's, you know, a possibility and that we do. And I'm able to, I mean, we have so many games. I can't watch all of them. But,
right, exactly. You know, with 18 teams, you're not watching every game.
Oh my gosh. No, man, I can't do it, you know. So, but, you know, especially teams that got, you know, big players on that I've been like working with a little more individually, then, you know, I'll be like, all right, hey, you know, this was really good. Now just watch out for this, you know, and just, you know, help them along the way. But the video is just very valuable. That helped me a lot throughout my career. And so I even tell them, you know, my mistakes, you know, I'm like, man, it's good that you have somebody that's in your ear, because there was a point in my career where I started shooting my free throw a different way, where I bring it back behind my head and my shot would hit the front of the rim a lot because it was almost a line drive. And I go, for whatever reason, I don't know why I made that change and nobody told me, you know, I mean, now I shoot it, you know, the proper way, especially when I teach it. But I was just like, you know, I could have been a better shooter at the free throw line if I had somebody alongside to say, hey, why are you shooting it like that? And so that's kind of what that's the example I use for the kids and try to tell them, hey, you know, why do you hold the ball in this position? You know, you're just, it's too much movement or, you know, whatever it is.
Right, right. So tell me a little bit about your day to day at IMG. So what, I don't know if you have a typical day, but just kind of walk us through what it looks like. Like, what are you doing on a daily basis in terms of your coaching responsibilities?
Well, it just depends on the time of the year, the time of the season. I mean, we have kind of like, you know, the summertime, we have a lot of camps. So most of the kids are, you know, home in their countries playing, you know, for their teams and AAU teams, and we're you know, doing camp. So that camp, from, we have like two sessions. It can be from 8 to 10 and then from 1 to 3. And that will be throughout the whole week, for, you know, I don't know how many months, it just seems like forever sometimes. But, you know, that is a real grind. That's the summertime. And that's where we get a lot of, you know, a lot of kids that come here for the camp, and then they're like, man, they like it so much. And then they want to, you know, improve their game, and they'll decide to come here. And then we'll have, when school starts, we'll have like a preseason where, cause I'm right now, I'm like a skills and development coach. So there's two, three other guys, and we will get everybody, you know, the basic skills that they need to be successful at the position that they're playing at. And so the kids are exposed to, you know, post-ups, you know, pin downs, you know, pick and roll, everything that you could possibly think of. We try to give it to them. And then, you know, that way, once the season starts and they start getting with their teams, they should be able to kind of hit the ground running, so to speak. And so when a coach says, all right, we're going to do a ball screen on the side, the kid knows what to do, how to do it, and, you know, at least the fundamental part of it. And so, yeah, then we'll do that. That'll be like the preseason. And then once the teams are assigned, then us as skill coaches, we might be with one or two different teams throughout the day, depending on the needs of the coaches. They're like, hey, my big guys, they need to work on, you know, the pick and rolls or their post-ups. You know, if you could just work with this guy. And then, you know, we'll set up a time and try to do that. And at the same time, I'm also assistant coach for one of the varsity teams. So I got to be with those guys as well. So we kind of are jacks of different trades here. And, you know, everybody helps everybody out. And I mean, we got an awesome staff, a lot of people with a lot of experience, ex-pros, high level coaches. And you're always learning, like you're learning, like whenever I walk by somebody else's practice, like I'll see something, I'll just record it and like, man, I like that. You know, I like the way they do that on defense or whatever it is. So there's like a wealth of knowledge here with the 18 teams we have. So it's pretty cool. So, I mean, I could get home by 4 or 4:30, or I could be there till 8. It just depends on what is needed on that day. So scheduling is very important.
Have you been in the same role during the entire time that you've been there?
Yes and no. Cause I, like I said, I'm always trying to help out the post players and the bigger kids. But I've been assistant coaches, assistant coach for the girls post-grad, for the girls varsity. I've been, a head, you know, coach for one of the, varsity teams we had 1 year because they had so many kids on the team and we had to split them up to make sure they all are getting, you know, looked at, you know, getting film.
Right.
And so like, it just depends on what is needed at the time. And sometimes you just have to answer that call and do that. So, but it's, you know, it's fun. You know, it's not easy because there's a lot that goes on. And like we always say at IMG, there's a lot of moving parts. You have different departments, you know, the academic side and, you know, making sure the kids are getting the food if they're bringing the food over and things like that. So it's a lot that goes on. It's a pretty amazing place.
What's your favorite part about being in that type of atmosphere as opposed to, let's say, when you think about a coaching career, as opposed to maybe being a coach in, at the college level or even at the high school level? What do you love about being at IMG? And I know you maybe can't necessarily compare it directly because you haven't been in those positions, but just when you think about what your day-to-day is like at IMG, what do you love about it?
I mean, you're just around basketball all the time. And you're around some pretty amazing kids. Like I said, just kids from different places. And the one thing I really enjoy is seeing, you know, when you've worked with a kid or maybe even just talked with them and that moment where they do it and you're just like, that's it right there. And then they're like, okay, you know, and they get it. Now you just try to do it again, you know? And
right. Yeah.
So, those are the moments I really enjoy is just seeing a kid that's maybe been there for 2-3 years. To see where they've come from and then where they are now, that kind of a thing. So, you know, those are just real rewarding moments because like these kids don't understand like the resources that are available to them. Like I said, we didn't have cones. I mean, we have a plethora of cones and chairs and all these props to help them. And you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
You know, some in, you know, really take it in and are appreciative and then others, you know, not so much. And I mean, we get all different, you know, ends of the spectrum. So, it's just kind of cool to try to figure out those puzzles and those locks and the kids that come with maybe damage from other teams or, you know, you just try to help them, whether it's basketball or just some good life advice, you know, to help them. So those are some of the things I really enjoy.
So when you are looking at, again, working across 18 teams. So you're talking about, what, 100, 200, 200 players or so?
About 140.
Okay, so you're not necessarily getting to spend a ton of time with each and every kid, but there's clearly some that you're going to spend more time with, either because they're, again, they're a big guy that can use your specific expertise. But like, let's just say that there's a kid who you're spending a lot of time with. What's the amount of time that you're spending with a kid during a season? Obviously, you're helping out with a team, but when you're working with an individual player, like how much time are we talking about that they're seeing you on a one-on-one or a small group basis over the course of, you know, a week or a month?
It's really hard to say. It just depends. If I am like assigned to a team, like I'm an assistant coach with a team with our varsity blue right now, I mean, I'll definitely see those guys and they'll hear my voice, you know, almost as much as they'll hear the head coach's voice. Because, you know, we've been there, we've done that. And the coach, you know, has that confidence, in us that we're on the same page and also just to point things out, like, you know, why would you stand there? You know, or why did, you know,
right. I know,
you know, sometimes it's stuff that's obvious.
Yep.
And it's good to have an extra set of eyes to be able to help it out. Cause you know, the head coaches have so many things they gotta, you know, they want to get through and take care of. And sometimes maybe the kids don't understand. Even if it might be a kid that speaks more Spanish than English and or Italian, and I can, you know, just tell them, hey, you know, and I'll tell them in their language, and it'll just kind of help them out a little bit. So yeah, it's, you know, it's, it could be a full hour together. It could be the full 2 hours of the practice time. It just really varies on the time, what the schedule is, and things like that. But I mean, we see these kids, we're always, you know, hey guys, you know, always trying to have a positive atmosphere where everybody is, you know, saying hello to each other and acknowledging each other. And, especially for some of these kids, you know, that's a big thing, you know, cause some of them are away from home. They're in a boarding school and they, you know, their parents aren't around and they need that encouragement. Like, hey man, you know, you're doing all right today, you know, and, all right, man, you know, we can talk. Or, you know, hey, I see, you know, you had a great game the other night, man, keep it up. You know, just words of encouragement. And these kids need it so much. There's so much negativity out there.
Yeah, I think that ability, and when we talked to Jeremy Schiller, who you're working with, obviously, with your IMG Blue team.
Yeah.
When we spoke with Jeremy, he talked a lot about how important he felt it was to be able to build that culture, like once the teams are put together, that he really focuses a lot on trying to make sure that those kids come together as a group and come together as a team. And as you said, that they're getting some of that encouragement and because they are in many cases a long way from home and they don't have family, obviously, there with them. And you guys as coaches kind of become their, you know, their de facto family.
Right.
So to be able to sort of build that culture. So when you think about that piece of it and building a culture with kids who are coming from all over the world and they're put together and in a couple of weeks, you kind of got to put it all together and form a cohesive team. What does that look like? How do you think about that process for you in your mind?
I mean, I just remember when I played, like, I mean, you know, one day, you're playing with guys that you know, and the next thing you know, you're flying to another country where they speak a whole different language and they do things really different. And, you got to figure it out, you know, really quick or else, you know, you'll lose your job. I mean, the kids are not losing their job because most of them are paid to be there, but you know, it's good to have that voice of, sympathy and compassion. And, that we could say, hey, man, I remember when I was in Italy and this happened, that happened, you know, it's kind of like, you know, how it's going here, you know, I'm sure you're missing that food or whatever. And then I'll just talk to them about, oh yeah, I remember that one dish that the Italians always made. Oh yeah. Yeah. I like that, you know, and just get their mind off of, you know, some of those things and just kind of help them to refocus because I mean, I had to do that. I remember that being alone. Not able to speak, you know, the language and you know, your teammates were like, we don't know about this guy. And so I'm just like, you know, I just try to tell them, like, you be the one that sets the temperature to the room. Like, if somebody's going to be mean to you, then you know what? That's the way they are. And you don't let that affect your day. You know, if things aren't going well, you know, everybody has their days. Take a deep breath, take a step back. All right. And let's get back into it. Cause if this is what you want to do, you want to play basketball, you got to be able to do that and make those adjustments. And it's going to have to be like really quick in the game because we need you out there, you know, that kind of a thing. So, yeah. And culture, each coach has a different way of setting standards and having culture. So that's also a challenge too, because if the kid is on one team 1 year, now they moved him up to varsity, it's a different culture, a lot more accountability. And sometimes the kid hasn't matured yet, you know, to be able to handle that. So there's a lot of dynamics, but like I said, we got a great group of people. We have mental coaches, nutrition, leadership coaches to really try to help those kids. And, you know, so it's really cool.
Yeah. I love the idea that you can use, as you said earlier, your experiences at all different levels of the game. There's really nothing that you haven't experienced in some way, and to be able to have you as a resource to share with those kids and pour into them and give them an opportunity to learn from somebody who's had your extensive experience all over the world in the game of basketball, I'm sure is something that is extremely valuable. Before we wrap up here, Daniel, I want to ask you one final two-part question. Sure. Part one is, when you look ahead over the next year or two, what do you see as being the biggest challenge that you have in front of you? And then the second part is, when you think about what you get to do every single day, what brings you the most joy about coaching at IMG? So your biggest challenge and then your biggest joy.
You know, I think right now the biggest challenge, you know, just being honest with you, is just being able to, you know, be valued, getting paid what you're worth, you know, and that's really hard to find nowadays. You know, a lot of people that have some very high quality experience, you know, are not in positions where they can be very effective just because, you know, of the pay or whatever it is. So I think that's the challenge for me. Cause I feel like I do bring a lot of valuable things, to IMG. And again, you know, just very blessed to be a part of it. But you know, we just always want to strive to do better, get better. And, you know, you would like to be rewarded for some of those things. So, I mean, I think that's with any job, you know, you want to feel valued. And you want to be in a place where they like, you know, yes, you know, we value you and we feel like you're an integral part of what we do here. So I think that for me is a challenge. And then, you know, like I said before, I mean, I just really enjoy helping these kids kind of find their way in this world, you know, whether it is through basketball or not through basketball or whatever sport it is. I mean, it's not for everybody. You know, the game of basketball, the game of baseball, football, it is not for everybody. And so hopefully these kids will be able to learn some things. Maybe it is for them, but then maybe they'll take some of the things that they learn, because I believe just about any sport, you're going to be able to learn something to incorporate into the working world or the next, you know, step in your career. So yeah, just knowing your value and just being able to help people, you know, make that next step in their career or in their journey in life. So those are the challenges and also the things that I enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well said. I think talking about, again, not just making an impact on the basketball court, but making an impact on your players' lives off the court. And I think that's what everybody as a coach, there's obviously wins and losses that are a big part of how we all get evaluated. But at the same time, I think every coach would say that being able to impact the players in more ways than just teaching them how to be a better shooter or have better footwork, if you can really impact them off the floor, that's really what it's all about. Before we wrap up, I want to give you a chance to share how people can find out more about you, whether you want to share social media, email, how can people reach out to you, find out more about what you're doing, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
I'm on LinkedIn, just my name, Daniel Santiago, and then Instagram. I try to, put up some cool photos or whatever, like throwback, days or whatever. And that's Daniel Santiago, 1525. Really don't have too much else going on other than, just always open and available. And one thing cool about Instagram, I've been able to connect with some old teammates and good friends and, friends of the family over the past couple of years. My daughter got me into the Instagram thing. So it's like a blessing and a curse. Yep. Sometimes you're just like, man, how long I've been scrolling. So, so that's where they can find me. And you can find me at the IMG, website and shoot me an email on my work and I'll try to get back to you.
Awesome. Daniel, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule tonight. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.